There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, welcome to Tell Me Your Tales. Thanks for joining me for another podcast episode. This week's conversation is with Steve Gray. Steve is maybe someone you may not have heard about. I don't think you can Google Steve and get a whole lot of information, but Steve is an absolute legend. He is an Ironman triathlete, finishing 4 Ironmans. He's heavily involved in the Ironman scene here in Chukamauama and pretty involved all over Australia. He's got a pretty amazing story and is one of those just absolute community legends that we need more of in this world and in this day and age. He's somebody I've had a bit to do with over the last couple of years and wasn't sure if he'd be willing to come on the podcast. Steve is a very modest man, doesn't like the attention, and just goes about his things really quietly and but helps out so many people in so many ways. I love speaking to Steve. It was one of the favourite interviews I think I've... Oh, not interviews, one of the most favourite conversations I think I've had, and he's just so down to earth and, yeah, could talk to him all day, and he's just got some really good things to say and share, and I think you agree, and I really hope that you get something out of this conversation, even if you've never heard of Steve before. If you're one of those listeners from somewhere over Australia or over the world, I guarantee you're still going to get something out of this conversation with Steve. So definitely stick around and have a bit of a listen to it. Thanks again for tuning in, guys, and enjoy this conversation with triathlete Steve Gray. Rightio, Steve Gray, welcome to Tell Me Your Tales podcast. Thanks for coming over in the little Airbnb at the back. It's been ages since I've recorded one back here.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
Yes. I'm stoked to have you here because I want to learn heaps about you because I don't know that much about you.
Yeah, I don't know if there's that much to know, but hopefully we'll find out some secrets and skeletons in the closet.
Can you remember when we met?
I can't, because
don't be offended if you can't. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I was thinking that the other day. Like, just when I was writing some notes down, I was like, when did I meet Steve? Like,
I don't know. It would have just might have been Jono's run or something like that, early.
Well, we did that team triathlon before Jono's run kicked off, didn't we?
Yeah, the January trial.
For you on your bike?
Yeah.
I remember competing in that with him, but I can't remember.
I reckon Jono's run. I reckon that first year they had that.
I reckon that was before the triathlon.
Could have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I can't remember when I met half the people, especially in Chukamauama, like Faz or Sanzi. I cannot remember the one time I was like, bang, that was the first date that I met you.
Yeah, I think you just, because people are always around, they're always around. It's not officially, you know, the day I met you, so.
Yeah, and it was probably like a group run or some meeting or something, and you're just kind of in the same meeting together but not really talking to each other, and then the next run you might say g'day, and then the next run you're running together the whole way. It's probably something like that, I reckon.
Yeah.
Tell the listeners who you are, mate. I always get the guests to introduce themselves.
Yeah. So, obviously, my name's Steve Gray. I'm a 46-year-old tree farmer from Turumbury, which But people always say, oh, that sounds like a really easy job, just planting trees and watching them grow. There's a bit in it. I'm married to Beck, who's a nurse at the hospital, and I've got three kids, Grace, Campbell and Matilda. And yeah, I do triathlon, ride bikes, I run, and I swim. So yeah, I like doing that sort of stuff to keep active and the social side of it.
How long have you been in Echuca for? You weren't born and bred, were you?
No. Been in Echuca for probably 25 years, I reckon.
Yeah.
Grew up in basically Shepparton.
Yeah.
From about age 8 to 21. Went travelling when I was 21 and met Becky, who was from Tokemwal.
Did you?
I met her in Cairns, so travelled Australia and met a girl from 80 k's up the road in Cairns, and yeah, that was it. So we finished travelling Australia together and settled back in Echuca.
Yeah, right. Love at first sight kind of thing. Big move, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like just to meet someone on your holiday and then life commitment kind of thing.
Yeah. That was sort of just how it worked out. I didn't plan it. I certainly wasn't
planning
on settling down at 21, 22, but it's how it worked. And yeah, I'm pretty happy it did.
And then did you live in Shep for a while and then moved to Echuca together?
We went back to Shep for a little while to mum and dad's, and I worked for dad for a little while. And then a job came up over here with my uncle, Gary Campbell, in earthmoving, so Guy's dad, and worked for him for 3 years on the Bobcats, and then this job came out at the tree farm, and yeah, I just took it with both hands and
been there ever since.
Yeah.
You had some interesting cats working for you at the tree farm, haven't you? It was like Carly's brother Cam Don't, he worked there.
Oh, did he?
And I remember he was around here yesterday. He was trying to get him to fix me whippersnipper while he was here.
Yeah.
And he said, like, Steve kind of takes people under his wing a bit who kind of need a bit of a second chance or come out of jail. Like, I know you've worked with a few people like that before, and you kind of just give them an opportunity when a lot of people wouldn't.
Yeah, we've got a bloke out there at the moment who had a bit of a holiday on the government, and he worked for us previously and then went chasing a lady over to Western Australia, and things didn't work out and he got a bit mixed up in the wrong stuff. And he came back and he was looking for a job, and I said, well, mate, yeah, you've been here before, and he worked so well then, and he's been there ever since and hasn't really missed a beat. So that, yeah, they're kind of nice stories that you put your faith in those people and they repay it by still being there. But we've had some, I actually had Mel Norwood.
Did you? Yeah, I remember you telling me that.
Years and years ago, yeah.
Jeez, 2:12 marathoner.
Oh, I know.
Wasn't he said, banging out really fast times as well? And you were just like, you need to get another job. You don't want to be doing this during the day.
That's it. I couldn't believe it. I said, not the Mel Norwood. And he's like, yeah. I said, pardon the French. I said, what the fuck are you doing here? We're for $12 an hour, you know. He's like, oh, it's not that much money in running. Yeah. And it probably wasn't back in those days.
No. Well, he was an interesting case because it was almost... like Monteghetti went one direction and Mal was running pretty similar times and nearly racing him every week, and he kind of went the opposite direction because it was a matter of kind of minutes that, you know, one got picked on a team, the other one didn't, and all of a sudden Mon has made a life out of running and Mal's working at a tree farm and he was selling shoes at Bicknell Sports in Bendigo for years and kind of the hard luck story in a way.
Yeah, those lost athletes, a bit like Peter Norman and those sort of blokes that just get left behind.
Great stories, but you feel for them, don't you?
Cause
lived a hard life after those sacrifices and the highs and the lows they've definitely lived out.
Yeah, well, that's it. So,
what makes you give those guys a go at out of farm?
I don't know. It's probably just the demographic that come looking for a job too, that, it's not the most highly paid job or the most skilled labour. So you get those kind of blokes through the door, and to see them hang around and make something out of themselves is really, really, heartwarming for me.
Yeah, it must be really rewarding just to...
Yeah.
And hear that people are still talking about, like, you know, you can hardly probably remember Cam, that he's still banging on about it at my house yesterday.
Yeah, well, that's him. And over 20 years of working out there, you see a lot of faces come through the door. I mean, and some people last half a day.
Yeah.
They, you know, miraculously have a dentist appointment at 1 o'clock and you never see him again, so...
Too late then.
Oh, yeah. Mate, I could write a book of
excuses. I've got an appointment at 1 and then they just never come back.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny. Yeah, I often sit down and think I should write a book about all the people that have come and worked and the stories. And, you know, like we had one bloke come out and he had a broken arm and his job was to help manually load a truck. And he came out with his arm in plaster. He couldn't even drive out there. So the bloke that we were hiring off drove him out there. And I said, mate, what are you bringing this bloke out for? I said, just take him home. So, yeah, stories like that. It's all pretty funny.
Yeah, could be something in that. Podcast here is around here. Each week you just share a story of one of the workers.
Yeah, dimwits that I have embroidered.
So when you moved to Echuca, obviously you liked the place, if you're still here so many years after.
Yeah. Well, growing up in Shep, my grandparents and aunties and uncles lived over here anyway. So we spent a bit of time in Echuca and on the river skiing and that sort of stuff. So it wasn't that big a jump to come over here and I sort of knew what I was in for. We lived out at Nanila for a little while, which is just a little township just out of town.
15 minutes?
Yeah.
Tops, yeah.
Yeah, so we ride through there every Saturday morning on our way to Truins Hill. And that's pretty nice to go back through there. It was a good little town. We played tennis out there and there's not much left there anymore. So we were there for probably 2 or 3 years and then moved into Echuca itself and then out to the farm. And living on the farm is probably the best because it's right on the river and nice and quiet and, don't have too many neighbours giving us too many hassles. So.
Do you ever, or do you find living so close to where you work kind of does your head in a bit? Like no kind of break off or like division? It's always, you're always at work in a way?
Yeah, and that's probably one of the reasons that I do sport is like in the mornings to come in and just break that monotony of waking up, going to work, coming home, going to bed, waking up. You know, it's different people.
Yeah.
It's different stories, different conversations where if I didn't have that, I would just be talking to the people at work and then, my family, which, is great, but, you just need that different headspace sometimes, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something in that, isn't there? And being around, I found it when I started doing some work with the footy club in like November last year and kind of same thing. I was kind of running a lot by myself and spending time with Carly here and the girls at work and the 12-year-olds who were sitting in front of me every day. And then I was like, oh, it's good to kind of, I'd get to see you guys a bit when we train together, but then to be in a big bunch of like males and just the banter and the stupid stories and you're like, this is, I think it's healthy for people to have a bit of that.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And that sense of community too, isn't it? Like,
and you would love just running around with your Sam Kennedys and Darren Carmies and Brett Sands and there's about 5 alpha males in a group of 5.
Trav Hall.
Trav Hall, big Trav.
That's good because you just switch up at the back and you're like, I don't want to even be in this competition.
Yeah.
I'm just happy to smoke all you guys if we ever race, but I'm not going to whip off at all. I'm just going to sit here and,
just throw a few fishing lines in there every now and then.
Just bait, yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then early days triathlon, when did that kick off?
So growing up in Shep, I was a swimmer.
Yeah.
Did competitive swimming over there till probably 18. And I did a few team events with people as their swimmer. And then thought, I reckon I could do this myself. And did a few, didn't really train for it. You know, you like at that age, I'll go and do a 10K run the Friday night before a Sunday race. And kind of liked it, but then it was a bit late in that time in my life to really get into it, so I left it for probably, 10-15 years and didn't get back into it until I was about 34-35, I suppose.
Yeah, right.
Sort of when the kids were a bit older and I had the time. Just started doing the Wednesday night trials here in Echuca when it was nice early days and just grew from there, just gradually got longer and longer and
How good of a swimmer were you? Like going to state champs and stuff like that?
No, I did country champs and that sort of stuff and schools. Yep. Like went to the schools finals and that sort of stuff. But I was pretty much just the middle of the road.
Yeah.
Seemed to be always that one or two kids, that were better than you around the place. So. Mm.
But do you think there's something in that? Like if you were a gun and, didn't have those couple of kids in front of you.
Yeah.
And we're a bit of a child kind of freak and kind of trained hard and we go in the pool before school and stuff like that. Do you reckon you'd still have the love for the sport now?
Yeah, I often think about that because you see it with kids that are good at it and then it's easy come, easy go. Mm. They let it go because they get used to winning. Mm. And I certainly never had that. So I think there probably is something in that later on you get a bit of success as an older age grouper. And you think, this is all right. Maybe I am half good at this. So you keep at it. And I think you might be right.
I want to talk to you about that later on, just that your kids in sport and how hard to push and how... Yeah, it's an interesting kind of one.
Yeah.
But so when you started off at 35, that first time you went to an Echuca triathlon, were you just getting smashed and stuff? Because for people that don't know, people who are listening out there, you're pretty dominant and had some pretty impressive results in triathlon. So it's interesting to hear that you were kind of the little fish.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it wasn't, the club wasn't really big back then. There was probably only maybe 15 or 16 people doing it on a Wednesday night at the pool. And yeah, I went, I was probably in the middle of the road there, and but had some good successes in the handicap side of thing, and just, I don't know, just kept pushing myself to do better. I had trouble with my heart early on, probably from being an athlete as a kid, and then trying to push myself that hard again as an adult with not a lot of fitness. So I had a bit of atrial fibrillation that I had to have an ablation, which worked successful. So yeah, that was good to get rid of that. But then just found a really good spot and some really good blokes around Echuca to train with. It became that social thing that we just went out and tried to smash each other.
Yeah.
So you get better doing it that way.
Back onto the heart thing. Like, were you just competing or training or something one day and just noticed that?
Yeah, it was in a race. And I reckon it might have been one of the really early January races, like the big race we have. Yeah, hot. And it was just, it started just to flutter at the start, but then it lasted for about 2 days. And I started getting a little bit worried about it.
Were you like shaking your pulse and stuff? Like, was it through the roof?
Yeah, but it doesn't affect your pulse.
Yeah,
because it's your atrium. It's the blood, the valves pumping it into your ventricle. So it doesn't come through your pulse. So when I went to the, I think it was a Monday morning, I went into the hospital at about 3 a.m. and I was sitting in emergency, and I said to the nurse, my heart is like, it's racing. It's got to be doing 300 beats a minute. I said, here, look, feel my, and she took my pulse, and it was normal.
45 or something
like
that.
She said, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, I said, well, right, yeah.
Drugo straight off the street, yeah.
I said, put your hand on my heart then, and it was flat out. Yeah. And she said, oh, you better come through. So that's when they took me through. And
you didn't go home.
Yeah. It's not life-threatening at the time.
Yeah.
But it can cause clots and strokes and that sort of stuff if it's left untreated, so... Yeah, but when it's your heart, it automatically, you know, triggers a bit of a worry in you because it's only got one if it stops.
And do they give you a reason to why it occurred? Like, was it the lack of exercise in between 20 and 35?
They don't really know. There's studies into it now with endurance athletes. Emma Carney had it, and Greg Welsh had it as well. But they had the ventricular... tachycardia, which is the ventricle, so when that goes, that's dangerous because it'll just peak out. So they've got the defibrillators built into their chest now, so if it happens, it automatically shocks their heart and they'll fall down. They can't even see it coming. It'll just bang, shock their heart back into rhythm. So yeah, there is a bit of study into endurance athletes having it, but they don't know why. Stress can bring it on. Caffeine, alcohol, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's...
What about the decision to, like, early days, getting back in the sport, triathlon, and then you have this heart issue?
Yeah.
You could have easily been like, all right, I'm going back to doing what I've been doing the 15 years before and sitting on the couch and just working and...
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I don't know. It was probably because I had that little bit of success and thought, you know, I've got more in me.
Taste of it.
Yeah. There's more I want to do in it. I wanted to do, you know, half Ironmans and Ironman, that sort of stuff. So, I don't know. And then when the doctor said, look, if we have this ablation, you'll be back. You know, it won't affect you in any way. Like, you'll be as good as new. I thought, well, let's just do that. And, yeah.
And they say that. So, like, I've got as big a chance of it happening to me tomorrow morning as you do.
Yep.
Like, afterward, yeah. Okay. Yep. So, there's no doubt whatsoever in your mind when you're standing on the start line now that it's going to come back because they've given you that all clear.
Yep. No. Because it's hard to explain, but there's... I developed a second node in the atrium, which is the trigger that, like, the pulse comes from, the little electric node. So because there was two of them, they were shooting like two electric pulses.
Yeah,
so it was like bang, 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 instead of bang, 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 bang. So they go into your heart with like a welding rod, basically, up through the through your groin into your heart, and they weld or cauterize the inside of your heart and cauterize one of the nodes so it doesn't work anymore. So it's pretty out there.
Interesting
sort of
stuff.
Yeah.
And then when you were back, like the rising just triathlon, you just got better and better. And because your training age would have been so young, like you would have just been, even though you were, you know, 35, 36, 37 at this stage, you would have been like a 22-year-old kind of training age.
Yeah. I don't know what it was, but maybe the swimming gave me a bit of an engine. And I was never a good runner, and I'm still an average runner.
You always got to come off the bike, though. Like, that's a thing with you guys. You've never actually ran. I'd love just to like give you 6 months of run and train and see what you can run a marathon in, or a 10K or a half marathon.
Yeah,
or something.
I don't know. I don't reckon it'd change. I'll just go hard anyway. There's a saying in triathlon that if someone's not a very good runner, they run like a swimmer.
Yeah,
because right. swimmers are not very good runners.
Yeah,
because they've got soft legs and it's all upper body stuff. So, I don't know about the training side of it. I just got into it and just trained hard. And I'm that sort of person that I'm not real scientific with my training. It's just go on feel. If I feel good, I'll train good. If I don't, I'll slow down. So,
but that's good though, isn't it? Like, and you've always been, I've trained with you a bit, and you're always just like your body, you just listen to your body.
Yeah.
Rather like there's guys who download programs off the internet and kind of, you know what I mean? Like, you'll just listen and you know when you're, I've ran with you, when was it? You come back from that knee operation.
Yeah.
And you were out of shape big time. And remember like you were all going to Cairns.
Yeah.
And you like 8 weeks before you were coming back off this knee operation and you just slowly build and like first across the line up in Cairns with your Chukumo homeboys.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how I've always been, just know my body and like you said, just train to that, because I know people who go out and they're on the internet the whole time and they're looking for the next silver bullet. You know, oh, I've got to get this, or I've got to do that, or so-and-so's got to coach me because they're doing well. Or if you just go back to when you felt good and think about when you felt good and what you did and tweak it a little bit to your current position, and then, just use it. And it's not that scientific, I don't think. It's just... people are making money out of making it scientific or selling you the next best thing. So
it's funny, isn't it? Like, I was just writing a program for a person before you come around today, and like I felt guilty because I think sometimes people want something sexy or some silver bullet, and you're like, I just, his long run for the next 4 weeks was just 2 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours at this heart rate range, and I'm like, I feel bad emailing this guy because he's paying me, but I'm like, this is all you need to do. Like, it's not rocket science.
Well, I'm the same with Big T. I'm doing a program for him for Busso, and granted, he's not paying me, so I don't have that guilt. But it's not sexy.
Yeah.
It's this is the plan for the week. We'll tweak it a little bit. And sometimes I look at the program and I think I'm not even going to change that from week to week because it's working.
Yeah.
You
string a month, like that's what I'm trying to tell these guys. It's just stringing 4 weeks together, which is a month, and you're just going to be stronger if you can do it again, almost. Yeah. Like, change a few sessions here and there.
Yeah, just to relieve a bit of the boredom. But
mix it up and give you something to be excited about a session. But yeah, you're right, it's not rocket science. Yeah.
And giving them confidence too, like doing the same session and seeing, they see the improvement. Mm. You know, if you do the same session for 3 weeks and they improve after that 3 weeks.
Yeah.
If you change it, they might not see that improvement, so they think they're plateauing. So.
Well, in the head's a big thing, isn't it? Like, athletes like doing...
I think it's the biggest thing.
I think, and it can be a big thing. It can be the biggest thing if all you need to do is look at your training to then that become, I always run. If I've got a training diary and it's like 8 weeks of good work, I just know it's... In my head, I'm like, all right, I'm ready to race well.
Yeah.
Even if, scientifically, I'm in exactly the same shape of 4 weeks. I know if it's 8 weeks, my head goes, I've done it. You've done hard work for 8 weeks. You're ready to roll.
Yeah.
Do you think, is triathlon similar to running where people, you kind of said, like, people flog it off this silver bullet trying to make money and people just try to make it sexy on social media.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's not. Like, it's just bloody hard. Like... And then people have got these photos up on Instagram and stuff and it just looks so good. And it's, I heard an interview the other day with a guy and he kind of said, I wish elite athletes would just put up their crap days.
Yeah.
Because these kids sitting at home, he was a college coach, these kids train college, all they're doing is checking Instagram, seeing all these pros and how good this run was and how fast this split was and how beautiful it is to be tanning at 12 o'clock during the day. And I'm just like, this is exactly right. And I don't know, I've been a sucker for it. I often put like good stuff on Instagram.
Yeah.
Makes my life look 20 times better than it is.
Well, that's it. And you look at your Big T's who are out at 5:30 in the morning because they're working 8-9 hours a day. They're out at 5:30 in the morning. Yeah. They're trying to squeeze a swim in at lunchtime and then doing something else in the evening. Like the pros have got it so easy.
Yeah.
They wake up at 7 or 8 and... Yeah. Go out for a swim and come back something to eat, a massage, a bit of a rest, another session
Netflix,
in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Go and get my legs waxed, head down the solarium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess you're involved in kind of both worlds, you know what I mean? Like you, you know, Trav, I'm sure, and he wouldn't take any offence, like, he wouldn't know as much about the elite triathlon world as you guys do.
Yeah.
So, like, do you kind of see a... I guess my question is, yeah, like, is it... It'd just be completely different worlds, because... And do you get annoyed that they're so different, whereas other guys are trying so hard?
Yeah, I do. And I get annoyed with the magazines and the...
Yeah.
And because it's, like, people... Like, age groups and that buy these magazines. Mm. And it's either advertising or all about these pros that have got the perfect life and that sort of traveling the world.
Mm.
And I do get annoyed at it. But yeah, they would be having shit days like we do.
Yeah.
Probably not as many, but yeah.
Because triathlon's a bit of a money sport, isn't it? Like,
oh, yeah.
The amount of money, I'm just talking to you before we started recording about Carly's signed up for her first triathlon. And she's going, oh, we might need to buy a new car to fit my bike. And I'm like, we're not buying a new, yeah, well, I'd have to buy like station wagon or something. Like, we're not buying a new car just because you've started triathlon 3 days ago.
Yeah.
But I guess it's that probably high socioeconomic kind of clientele as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just entering the races alone is.
Yeah, this one we're doing next week, this team one.
Yeah.
Like, we're not paying for it, but I got the receipt for it on the entry, and I was like, whoa, it's like $400 or something, wasn't it? $350?
Well, Noosa Triathlon on the weekend, Sam Kennedy offered me one of his mates tickets and couldn't go, and it was $350.
And that's Olympic distance, like 10K run?
Two hour race, $350.
Whoa.
And then you got to get there and, you know, get your bike there.
Up there. Yeah. And you've already got a 10 grand bike plus, wouldn't you? Like, the bike are pretty expensive,
Yeah, with all the bells on it, So it is, it's a fairly expensive sport, but you can do it on a shoestring. You don't have to have all the good gear.
Do you reckon it restricts people though? Like, do you reckon triathlon would have more kind of hard luck stories? You know how kind of ultra runners and kind of like marathoners, and you see them and they're like same thing what they've been wearing for 3 years, same shorts, like Explorer socks or something, but they just bang out like ultras and marathons year in, year out. And I just wonder how many people could be trying. Imagine if you could pay like a starter, you probably can't, like it's like $200, here we go, we hook you up for 12 months with all the kit, all the entry, all the stuff. If you don't want it, to pay whatever more in 12 months time, you give it back and we'll give it to someone else, kind of as a bit of a scholarship. I wonder how many people would then have a crack at it.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's probably the ongoing thing too, and what we got back to, you know, everyone's got to have the latest and the greatest. So that bike that you bought this year worth $5,000 or $6,000, like 2 years down the track, it's worth $2,000 and it's out of date. Or those sneakers, they're not bright enough anymore, or you know, it's
don't have a carbon plate in the middle of them like the new Nike ones yet.
Yeah. But it is very expensive, and to get started. You can get started on a budget, but ultimately that bug comes in where you've got to be keeping up with the Joneses. So
does it make a huge difference though? Like, if you're on a $2,000 bike compared to a $10,000 bike and you've got the same ability, would you just get smashed on the bike?
No, probably not.
You wouldn't, okay.
No.
You can't pay to be a better athlete in a way.
Yeah, it's minimal percentage that money will buy. The
better rider's still going to go well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where do you think the future of triathlon's going to go?
Don't know, probably just bigger and brighter, I suppose, and more expensive. Because these companies are making lots of money out of it, like IMG and Ironman and all that sort of stuff are making big bucks, so it's become a real business.
Well, it has, hasn't it? And it's a bit like big city marathons. Like, people who've got the money want to go to these big races to tick it off their bucket list. And the more people that want to go, harder it is to get a spot.
Well, exactly like Noosa, $350 a ticket, and there's 8,000 people up there doing the race. So.
And do they cap it at 8,000 and sell it out?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's unreal, isn't it?
Yeah, people will pay, and people have got the money, they'll pay to do it because they can get the Ironman jumper that says I'm an Ironman, and people will look twice and say, "Oh, you're an Ironman, you're great."
Good. They've done well marketing.
Yeah.
But like 70.3, like that's Ironman, but it's only half Ironman, isn't it?
Yeah.
People still love doing those ones.
Yeah, well, they're a bit more achievable. You don't have to put...
Still bloody hard.
Oh, yeah.
When you look at it on paper.
Yeah. You're not telling me anything.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I don't do Ironman anymore. I do half Ironman now to remind me never to do an Ironman again because they're that hard.
How many have you done?
I've done four.
Four.
Yeah, which was...
Where were the four?
I've done three Ironman Australia at Port Macquarie and one Ironman New Zealand.
Yeah.
The Ironman New Zealand one, I was probably the fittest I've ever been. And I had a satellite coach, Chris McDonald, who was in Albury, but then he moved to America.
Yeah.
And I was at the stage where I was just addicted. I had to do everything that was ticked off on that box. And if I missed it that day, I'd do it the next, I'd double up and do it the next day. And I got to the start line and I was as fit as I've ever been, but I was absolutely smashed.
Cooked.
Just cooked. And I had a, not a bad race, but I missed qualifying for Hawaii and it sort of shattered me a little bit.
Mm.
Darren Carmody was over there with me. And
how much did you miss it by?
Oh, something like 5 minutes or something like that. Yeah, probably, I can't remember now, but it wasn't many spots. Like, it was probably two or three spots in front of me.
Oh, did they go on spots? It wasn't a
time.
It
wasn't
a time.
Yeah, it was like a
top, whatever.
Percentage, yeah.
Far
out. So, yeah, and Carmo was over there and he said, oh, let's go and do Ironman Australia while you're fit.
Yeah.
And we'll get a ticket there. And,
did Carmo get a ticket that day?
No.
No, he missed out as well, yeah.
He might have at New Zealand, actually, but he didn't take it.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so we signed up for Ironman Australia, which was a month away. So it was going to be two Ironmans in a month, and which is just ridiculous.
It's
but that's
stupid, right?
That's
yeah,
the headspace that's, yeah. I was in. I was like, yep, that sounds great. Let's do that because I'm fit. I'm going to get there. And so no recovery, just kept training through. Got to Ironman Australia, felt all right, swim, ride, got into the run, was walking probably 15 k's into it, just a shot fox. Carmo walks around the corner, he's walking as well, and we just looked at each other and just laughed. It's what were we thinking? And it's the last one I've ever done. I just cooked my brain, cooked my body. And
your brain was probably cooked in the first one,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I well and truly finished it off though.
Yeah, did you finish that day?
I finished, yeah, I always finish, but it was just, it wasn't a glamorous finish. It was
a long day,
yeah, it was like 11 hours or something like that, which is,
Why, well, was someone from the outside like to pull your head in kind of thing, like looking at what you were doing? Like, and your kids would have been pretty young. And,
they know
when you just get a bit too obsessive with it, you need someone just to be like, someone you respect, be like,
I reckon,
hey, you got to stop doing this stuff.
Yeah, I reckon Beck was that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But were you listening, or were you kind of blinkers on focused?
No, I was an Iron Man, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the goal to go to Hawaii, like, was that just that whole, like,
well, I'd
Christmas?
Seen all... You know, a lot of mates and that going over there, and it was just the pinnacle. And I had to go. Ironman was, you know, Kona. It was the thing. You got to do it. And that's gone now. I really have no dream of going there anymore. Maybe when I'm in the 70 plus age group and there's only three blokes in it, I might get a chance. But probably don't have any real desire to do it anymore. Recently went to the Worlds in the US. And
Chattanooga, is that how it's pronounced?
Chattanooga.
I was trying to practice that before you got here.
Yeah. And I got over there, and the first time I went to Florida, it was amazing. Like, I was just so stoked to be there. Yeah. And then this time I got over there, and it had changed so much. It was just, it was probably the World Championships of wankers, I reckon. It was just, how brown can you get your skin? How smooth can you get your skin? Mm. How much fluoro can you wear? How much aero shit on your bike? It was just, I actually had no real emotion about being there, which is a shame. But,
because you're the different guy. You're the guy who gets up at like 5 a.m. and just grinds away. And like,
yeah.
You were running the other day wearing board shorts.
Yeah.
Like a Gundy single. Like, you're like just the, like, it's just good. Like, I love that stuff. Like, sometimes, like, I try to like emulate that, and I'll go, like, get home from work and I've just got an easy half an hour. I'll just wear like my work socks on.
Yeah,
just,
you gotta, like, gotta get the blue out,
right?
The Bonds bluey.
Yeah, they're white collar kind of workout. Like, so that would really piss you off, wouldn't it, being over there seeing that?
Yeah. I just took a bit of the shine off it. So, and I think that maybe affected my performance. I really, you know, probably didn't care that much during the race that I blew. Like, I wanted to do well, but when I blew, it was like, oh yeah, you know, like, this is hard. And it probably had put that 1% that I should have had.
Because you didn't rate the event as much as you thought.
Maybe in my mind, that's
wasn't
probably
as important to you anymore, so you didn't want to dig deep for it.
Yeah, probably at the time I didn't think that, but after it, I'm thinking, well, maybe that was a factor too. You know, I wasn't that inspired to be there when I actually got there, so, yeah.
But you inspire, like, that was a big achievement, like, and a big goal for the qualifier to go to the Worlds.
Yeah.
So that would have been like a big, almost like a, like, over pinnacle kind of thing. Like, you set your sights to qualify for, like, you've been trying to qualify for a few years, haven't you?
I think since last time I went, it was always in the back of my mind. And Sandy and I had missed a couple of times and then qualified a couple of times, but really didn't want to go because of where it was and the timing of it. So, yeah, it was probably a bit of a letdown once I got there, but I mean, I still enjoyed it, but I just didn't love it like I did the first time. And it's probably like anything, the first time you do it, it's always that you know, that dream, and you're trying to live up to it every time after. But and it's a bit like Iron Man. You do your first Iron Man, and there's no other feeling in the world.
Couldn't imagine what it's like. Yeah.
Yeah. And then,
talking about just trying to run marathons. Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know what. I know it's different. You're kind of not. It's a different. Like, you're not standing on the start line and going hammer and tongs for 42k. But the fact that you guys can run 42k's off 180k and 3.6k. Like, it's just.
I still reckon I've only ever done one out and out marathon over at Shep, and I still reckon that was harder than a marathon in an Ironman. Just the intensity of it, because you're racing it.
But it's we got a question for the podcast, the running podcast we do this week, and it was, what's your hardest run? What's the hardest race you've done? And I think, like, if you have a fair dinkum crack at anything, like, I can remember 800 metres that are hard.
Yeah.
And they're over in, like, a minute 55, but they still can be harder than some of the 15Ks or half marathons I've ran, because you're on a different edge and you might settle for 15K and then kick it home, and it's just a matter of how hard. And you're right. So when you did that marathon over Shep, you were going way quicker because it was just the marathon rather than kind of pace. And I think subconsciously, you just know how long you've got to be out there for an Ironman.
Yeah.
So you probably put that protective, you know, brain on quite a bit to know what's coming.
Yeah. And the 180Ks on the bike sort of takes a bit of that edge off too, where you go, right, I've just done that, I can't go out too hard, and I've really got to go through steady here, where toe on the line, you've trained for a marathon and let's go. So,
and even like the nutrition, like, you can get a lot of that down on the bike too, can't you? Over 180k, you kind of almost set yourself up to have it in and digest it and go again.
And it sounds funny, but you're actually looking forward to, after 180k's on the bike, you're looking forward to running a marathon.
It's like a bendy on the back. It's insane.
Yeah, it's a long way.
And then I get off and run at Elmore.
Yeah.
When you put it in that perspective.
So
back to that story about Beck, though. Like, so was she getting annoyed at you? Like,
not so much annoyed, but just, well, that last race, I actually, the Echuca Club had a tent along the run course. And I sat down.
Port Quarry, was this?
Yeah. I sat down in the tent next to Beck and just had a bit of a soup and said, I don't know why I'm bloody doing this. Like, I'm not enjoying this. I don't know why I'm doing it. And she said, well, just don't do it. And that was it. I thought, well, yeah, I'll finish this race and then that's it. It's just too hard on me, on the family, and like all this time I've put into it. And now I'm sitting in a tent having a sook.
Mm.
You know, it's not really fair on them if I'm not doing it and enjoying it. So,
yeah, all that sacrifice. Like, how many mornings would you've been getting up at 5 every morning for about 12 months, wouldn't you? You know what I mean? Like, how many hours away from your family, and then for it to be on race day, you end up tearing up in a tent. Like, That's not how it works.
No, it shouldn't be.
It's meant to go well and be like winning your age group and stuff.
Yeah, and I think I'm older and wiser now, and that may not happen if I train. I'd probably train a lot smarter, and I've probably got more time on my hands too. So I'll never say never, and one day someone will probably talk me into it, and I'll do another one. But
it's a hard event to. You can't really just do them socially, though, can you? It's like, I get people like, we'll do a half marathon, we'll sign up together, we'll run three times a week. It'll be enough. You'll get through. You'll be fine.
Dave Oman, do you know Dave?
No, I don't.
Dave's, he's done 20-odd Ironman Australia's or something like that. And he's that bloke you were talking about before in the Bond singlet. He's just the white-collar Ironman, because he'll go out and he'll start training probably a month before the race. And then he'll drop a few kegs and he'll, go out and do the race, and he'll take 16 hours to do it. He'll walk the marathon. I think in that last race at Port Macquarie, Dave was coming the other way and he had a big bag of potato chips. Well, not just a little bag, a big bag that he was carrying around on the run, just munching into them. He said, these are great. They got everything. They got carbs. They got salt. They got everything. And I just thought, that's the way to do it. Like, he just does it because he enjoys it. And I'm out there.
Unless you're doing it for a job. Like, I understand those guys can do it and it's their livelihood and they're the best in the world. So you need to put, and you have time to put those hours in. But it's a massive sacrifice for guys to put in almost pro hours around their families and full-time jobs and stuff like that as well.
And a massive cost too. The price. I mean, to go over to America this year and blow up, and you look back at the time you put into it and the money you spent on airfares and accommodation and all that sort of stuff.
Getting your bike over there and all that kind of stuff,
It is a bit disappointing when you don't perform where you wanted to. So, it's not going to get any cheaper, I don't think, the sport. So.
Did you learn a bit about yourself after that latest Worlds?
I was surprised that I wasn't actually as disappointed at blowing up as I should have been. And I was happy with that you know, that things happen on a day that you can't. I can't go out and train in the hills here, so I had to do the best I could. It was a hilly course. It was hot. I had all the excuses. Don't you worry about that.
But you're not generally a guy who needs or wants all the excuses.
No. And I think they were genuine excuses. I generally really didn't realise it was that much climbing in it. But, usually it probably takes me two or three. If I'm around here and around my mates and that sort of stuff, it takes me a lot longer to get over it, a shitty race than it does, probably did when I was over there, because I was moving on to new things. Like, we left Chattanooga and then started to travel. So your mind's off it and you're not around it anymore. It's like, right, shut that box. Mm. Let's go and do something else, which was good. Mm. What else did I learn? Don't know, probably not to set as high a goals next time, especially for something like that where it's a world championship. Mm. Yeah.
You were, because I remember the morning after the race, I woke up, because I was just about to go to Berlin, I think, and I kind of saw the results, and you told me the day before, top 20, was it top 20 you were aiming for?
Oh, top 20 would have been good.
I ran with you, and you kind of, and then I checked them, and I was just, I couldn't really make much sense of it.
Yeah.
I was just like, this doesn't, and I'd only known you, Cairns, what I spoke about before, only known you, like, setting yourself, doing the right training, going well, and coming back happy. So it was a bit of a... And I remember messaging Faz. I'm like, have you heard from Steve? Are these results right? Yeah. I couldn't really work out. And then I read your post about, you know, how you feel like you let people down and disappoint them and stuff like that. And it's...
And that's the hardest thing too with the internet and having such a big support base. You put so much pressure on yourself for other people. Like before you leave, everyone says, oh, you know, we're going to be up at night. We're going to be, you know, following you. So when you're doing the race and you know you're blowing... You're crossing these wires on the ground.
Yeah.
I've done it, Berlin, same thing.
You guys are sitting around. Yeah.
Sending your times back to Australia, and everyone's glued to it. And so many people have said to me, "Oh, I thought you got a puncher on the hill, you know, on the ride." And I said, "No, that was just the hill." it's one of those things that it really can put a lot of pressure on you. I don't know how you change that. You just
how do you deal with it? Like, you guys had a whole Facebook group going, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a new world that we're living in now where, you know, your last world champs, Facebook probably wasn't really, you couldn't even make groups on Facebook and things like that, and now you've got this.
Well, it's a catch 22. You've got to tell people, you've got to put it out there to succeed. You've got to say, well, I want to go top 20, or I want to do this time, or I'm going to do this.
Conor McGregor-like, you've got to name your goals.
Yeah, because if you don't, then you're not accountable. You're not accountable. You don't tell your mates you're just going over there for the fun of it.
Yeah.
And you say, yeah, I'm going to do this. Because everyone asks you, have you got a time in mind or what you want to do? So, it's a catch 22. You put it out there, you've got to perform. And if you don't, then you've got to be able to wear it. So,
But do you think we put too much emphasis on outcome goals? You can say top 20 or whatever. And imagine if you were getting marked on and you were judging your performance on the process goals, like the preparation you put together, the way you handled yourself in that, the discipline you showed, the sacrifice you showed leading up to that event, the way you gave it all on the race day. If that was what you're getting marked out of 10 on, rather than the finishing position or the... I often think it with Berlin. I'm like, you know, my prep was, you know, 9 out of 10. My race was 6 out of 10, but you know, I couldn't have done anything more. I ended up in the medical tent kind of thing. You know, do we get too caught up on... You know, missing that Comm Games time by 75 seconds. Yeah. That's all I've been thinking about. It's like here to the servo. At the servo when I was bloody at the front of my house.
It also drives you too.
It drives you. Yeah, I think it's good in that sense. But at the same time, you can get really hung up and overthink all that and think you're a failure when if you look at your preparation and how many mornings you got out of bed when you didn't want to at 4:30 or 5, it's really a success.
Yeah, it is. And that's probably, you've got to have those people around you that tell you that's what we're looking at.
Mm.
We're not looking at your result. We're looking at you, how you've done the whole thing as a process, which is your family and your friends and your little village that you live in.
And those people don't love you any less. Do you know what I mean? You actually figure out who you probably need to cut off a bit from the people that celebrate you or who are there when things aren't going as well. I remember, actually, it was good because Berlin to Berlin, you know, a few people kind of took some screenshots and put them up on Facebook and you're just like, I didn't hear from you guys this year. Where were you when I didn't run that time I wanted to run? Pricks. It's like an interesting kind of... But you're right. And it's good because your family and stuff really don't care.
No.
Like, I could tell my mum I ran 2:35 at Berlin. She'd be like, yeah, well done, Brady. I could have told her I ran 2:05. She would have been like, yeah, well done, Brady. Well, yeah. Like, she wouldn't have given two shits about how fast the marathon I ran. She'd be really just like, are you happy? If you're happy, we're happy. Like, yeah,
exactly.
No and one's going to cut you off.
That's that pressure you just put on yourself for everyone else's sake. And like I said, in that Facebook thing, you do, everyone that supported you feel like you've let them down. And you haven't. It's just that thing that goes through your head.
So, yeah, and you're right with those timing mats. Like, I remember thinking as well, like, every 16 minutes we're going over this timing mat. And I remember Sandy was saying, like, we're going into the study. Faz had, like, an alarm set at every 16 minutes. I'd go in there, refresh the page. They're like, oh, yep, still on track.
Yeah.
Whoops, no, not anymore. Yeah.
And because I do it myself, like, last year with you at Berlin, and that's, I remember just cooking tea in the kitchen, just watching it refresh.
Yeah.
I thought, that's what blokes will be doing, you know, at home, so.
But you feel a bit, even though you're the one with all the control, you feel a bit useless when it's there. Like, when my mate Julian came up next to me, he's like, come on, we've got to get to that next time, mate. People at home are relying on this split. Yeah. You're like, I want to, but I can't do anything. Like, I'm cooked, I'm done.
Yeah, it's not like you can just switch it up. Oh, yeah, I wasn't really having a crack. Oh, really? No, watching. I'm going to go harder.
Yeah, right. We're just going past 36K. I've been doing nothing for the last 36.
Yeah,
it's interesting, isn't it? What goes through your head when you kind of, like, when you were really struggling there? What were you thinking about?
I don't know, you just break it down to, in a half Ironman and Ironman, there's drink stations there every two, and you think, I'll get to the next one, have a drink, I should still feel better. And it just didn't happen. So in the end, it was just, hang on.
So you were hanging on for hope a bit. You were thinking, okay, maybe I'll come back.
Maybe get this hill out of the way, and the downhill will be easy, but the downhills were hurting just as much as the uphills. And I was running all right. Like, I was still running sort of 4:10, 4:15, but just the hills just killed me. And I just thought, oh, I just wanted to end.
Yeah.
But the slower you go, the longer the race takes. So you've got to keep running at some sort of pace. It's just so cruel.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
And we started about an hour and 40 minutes behind the elites.
Mm.
So out of the swim and onto the ride, the elites were finishing their bike and we were going out onto our bike, so they were 2 hours in front of us, and we were in, like, right through the middle of the day, and probably one of the, I think we were the last group to go. So on the two lap course, you could turn right and go to the finish line or turn left and go out again on the run course. And I just remember getting to that point, and there was heaps of people around over this bridge over the river, and it got there, and then it was like blokes standing going, right if you're finishing. And then it just turned from heaps of people around to, like, no one around. It was, you know, gone from thousands of people to probably three or four. And I just, that killed me as well. I'm like, oh, I've got no one to pick off.
Yeah. Have you ever DNF'd?
I DNF'd in Cairns probably 3 years ago. I got a puncher 5Ks into the ride and I only had a single tyre on, so no spares or anything that I could change it with. And that probably hurt more than blowing up, because you can't do anything about it. At least blowing up, you can finish the race and get your medal. And
when you're so fit and stuff as well, like, you haven't even given this body a chance to let it show what you can do.
Yeah, so that was my worst one. Yeah.
Would have been a long trip home too, wouldn't it? Like, you're on the other side of Australia. Just like, ugh, got to come back and face the world here.
Well, in Cairns, you finished
the
race.
It's a good excuse, though. Like, it's a cop-out.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't control that. I punchy guys.
I had to walk back, basically back to get a lift all the way back into Cairns, which is about 30 Ks.
Just walking with your bike.
Just walk. Oh, the bloke gave me a lift to the outskirts of Cairns, and I had to walk it in to transition past all the crowd and everything with this disc wheel with no tyre on it.
Yeah.
And I just parked in there, and when we finished the race in Cairns, we go to a place called Rattle and Hum that's right on the Esplanade. Mm. And you probably start, you know, having a beer at about 11:30, 12 o'clock or something. So needless to say, that day it was about 10 o'clock.
Yeah, straight in.
Just watching the boys.
Put the bike up against the wall.
Yeah.
Ah, funny. Juniors, I want to talk to you about this because your son was pretty elite, is pretty elite triathlete. As a dad who's in the triathlon, and there's a son who picks up triathlon pretty well, you know, Vic team three or four times. How does that balancing act go when you want your son to get the best out of the sport, but you still want your son to be a kid, not involved in elite sport?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask that. And it is such a balance, and I probably could be accused of being too pushy.
Don't that's bullshit. No one.
Yeah.
People that know you well wouldn't accuse you of that.
Yeah. I don't know. You just never know. There's things you do and you think, oh, I wonder how that came across, you know. But I'm a big believer that, like, you can't push kids, but you need to give them a gentle nudge because kids are inherently lazy. Like, if you don't encourage them to go and do something or take them somewhere and, you know, they'll rather, especially this day and age, they would rather sit inside and play video games and do nothing.
The start of stimulus. Like, we say with kids at school, like, we used to give the kids a laptop at school and be like, yeah, you can do these maths questions on the laptop. And they'd be like, whoa, really? Yeah. This is what? Now it's just like, we're bored with this. Like, if we can't listen to music at the same time while we're doing it, why we're on our phones, it's no good.
And hopefully that swings around and they get bored with that sort of technology and come back to sport. But, it is a hard one, and at times you think, you know, are we doing the right thing, pushing him and, you know, forking out a lot of money to travel to do this racing. And I think Campbell really enjoyed it too, but they got to a point where the end of last year he made the Vic team again to go to Nationals, and it was 6 weeks after the end of our season. And he just said, look, Dad, I really can't. Because it had been a long season.
Yeah, don't have the energy. Yeah, he said,
I just want to have some time when I come home from school and do nothing.
Yeah.
And he's doing VC as well. And I said, well, yeah, that's fine, mate. I said, give it some thought. I don't care if you do or you don't. And I don't want to be the one dragging you out of bed at, you know, 5:30 in the morning if you don't want to go that's not going to make me happy. It's not going to make you happy.
Yeah.
Beck was a little disappointed because... it was at Hervey Bay and she'd sort of booked her holidays and then around.
So, some warmer weather during winter.
Yeah, so she was probably more disappointed. But and I could see his point because 6 weeks of training leading like into April and that sort of stuff, it can get a little bit cooler and it's a hard yard. So, basically he did that and hasn't really done much since last March. So he's just...
Hasn't done much triathlon. Done a lot in being a kid.
Being
an 18 or 17-year-old. So
he's picked up the guitar and taught himself how to play the guitar. And
been a few more parties, you were telling me.
Been a few parties. He's
living
sort of
life
stuff.
A bit, isn't it?
Yeah, which is good. I would be disappointed if he stopped doing it and then didn't do anything else. I'm happy with the balance here. And triathlon or cycling and running is something that you can come back to later on, like I did. And I was guilty of it at his age, you know, 17, 18. I was burnt out from swimming, didn't want to do it anymore. You know, I went back to it a couple of times and I still don't like it.
You got to want to do it. Like, I was the same. I started when I was 16. And when I started, so many kids that I raced, like 16 through 20, just gone.
Yeah.
Like, prodigies could have easily been the next bit. Well, maybe couldn't have easily been because they didn't end up being it, but so much ahead of me, leaps and bounds ahead. And like, you know, I remember getting lapped twice, you know, in the state 5k at Victorian All Schools in year 12. The kid who beat me was Toby Rayner, absolute freak kid.
Haven't heard of him since.
I have heard of him. He's still he's one of the guys still around, but I've taken him down five or two. He ran his debut marathon a couple of years ago. This year, 2:27 I'm 7 minutes quicker than him. Didn't have a good day, like I think he cramped up and stuff, but raced against him in a few 10ks in the last couple of years and I think he beat me by 5 seconds or something, but like you know what I mean, like this is the guy who's, you know, I gave him a 3 minute head start when when we were 18 and now we're kind of in the same category of racing guys. And have you seen a few of those guys in triathlon come in and out?
Probably not actually, because when I was doing them when I was young, there's a lot of names that are still in it now. And I think it is one of those sports, like I said, you can take time off and it's pretty well timeless that you can come back to it and pick it up. It's not like the rules change that much and the game changes that much. It's still the basic setup. So
you still got that base you can access. Like guys can have, you see people with injuries, they might have 6 months off and stressy, but they kind of get back pretty quick because you just can access that base of fitness pretty easy.
Yeah, and Darren Carmody's like that. He did triathlon back when I did it. He's a little older than I am. But he did it back in the 80s as well. And he has got that massive base where he's just been running marathons all his life and it doesn't take him long to get back and he hardly ever gets injured. But he's got that leg strength that no one else I know has that can just keep going.
does a stack on the treadmill too. He was telling me, like, yeah, he just smashed himself. He had to buy a new one
because he wore a hole in it.
Yeah, put a hole in the treadmill. Yeah. Yeah.
And he's not a big bloke.
About 165 centimetres, I reckon. Yeah. Yeah, it's not like he's chucking a lot of weight onto that one.
Yeah.
Having kids, does it worry you, bringing up kids in this world? What, three kids under 20, 21, 20?
No, not really. I actually probably worry more for their kids.
Yeah.
Because I think I know what I'm doing, and my kids, like, I can keep track on them. But, I just fear for what it's going to be like in the future.
Mm. What parts? Like, what bits scare you?
Oh, I don't know. Just the world itself, mate. I'm a bit of a... what are those? I wouldn't go as far as say a prepper, but I think the world's going to turn to shit in the near future.
Mm. Do you mean like nuclear weapons and stuff like that?
No, not like nuclear. I just think
stack of earthquakes or like...
yeah, like not even the environment. I just think, you know, if you look at it sensibly, and if the power went out in worldwide tomorrow, or even statewide tomorrow, how do you get money? How does the fuel bowsers work? How do the traffic lights work? It would just be chaos.
Yeah.
I know it's a little bit crazy, but that's the kind of things you think about when you spend a lot of time training on your own. So.
Yeah, where did I listen to something the other day? They were talking about, if we, you know, we're going to have an asteroid or a comet hit or whatever.
Yeah.
The people who survive would be, you know, our indigenous tribes in the Brazilian forest that have been doing what they've been doing for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, yeah, we got this. We've been surviving, all people in Alaska who have been living, you know, 200 Ks in the snow and been our survivor. Like, we're all screwed.
Yeah.
Going to catch our own food and, like, you know. Mate,
if we have a 45-degree day here and the power grid trips out, people will be dropping dead left, right and centre because they haven't got their air conditioner. And that's what I think about. It's not the environment, because that's going to look after itself.
Yeah.
It's... I don't know. Yeah, I'm not worried about my kids, put it that way. I'll just... Not yet, anyway. They haven't done anything to warn me that it's all going to turn to shit.
Yeah, yeah. Having kids your age, though, because I've spoken to a couple of people who've got younger kids, but you would have seen them with and without technology.
Yeah.
Has that changed, like, the way that the kind of dynamics in a family... that they can now pull out their smartphone and access so much information or watch YouTube channels or, you know what I mean? Like,
they don't use it for good. They use it for evil. Like, Telly's a big Kardashian.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So whereas, you know, when she was 10, she wouldn't have known who the Kardashians were.
No. I don't like that side of it, the technology. I like that they know a lot about the world.
Mm. And it's accessible. Like, you can find out something pretty quick if you want
to. But as far as street smarts go, like... I'd much rather have the kid be smart, you know, about, go over to the shed and weld something up or, you know...
And
go
those people skills, like be able to have conversations with someone that you haven't spoke to before and be courteous and, which your kids are.
Yeah, yeah.
Great, she works, she's still waitressing, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like American, how many good skills is she developing doing that job?
Yeah. They're pretty good. They used to be better, though, and I think...
But didn't we as well, though? Like, I used to be better before I got a smartphone and stuff like
that. And more polite. They're not polite anymore because no one says thank you on text message or, please or anything. It's just bum, 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 bum. And they talk like they message. So
it's an interesting world, isn't it?
It is.
What does success mean for Steve Gray?
I'd like to think I'm pretty successful. Just got a great family, got a great... group of mates and friends, live in a great town, got a great job with a great bunch of people. So that is success to me. Just being able to do what I want to do, basically when I want to do it.
It's on your terms, isn't it?
Yeah.
Community's pretty important to you as well, though, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
You said that group of mates, and you're always trying to get people together for runs or you know, chipping in for charity groups and stuff like that.
Yeah, it is. And I think it brings other people up too. And you see see blokes that come into the running group, once they're in there, they might go missing for a couple of weeks, but they realise how important it is to them. They'll always come back.
Mm.
And it's there's nothing, no secret in it. It's the bullshit, it's the banter and all that sort of stuff that brings them back.
Mm.
Just that.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
That release, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Like, you just... something in you just craves that kind of...
Yeah.
And it's like half the time it's at your expense, but you still go back and want more of it.
And Sam Kennedy loves it. He gets the most shit hung on him and he just thrives on it.
I can't... even when he did that session, when was it, 2 weeks ago? I think I spoke about it on another podcast, actually. I was talking about triathlete training. What was he doing? Like 4 minute efforts, but he had like a 7 minute recovery in the middle. And I was talking to a runner mate, and I'm like, this triathlete had a 7 minute recovery.
Yeah.
And I couldn't work out if he was just taking the piss and be like, yeah, 7 minutes. I was like, really? 7 minutes? You only went for four. Do you really need 7 minutes to get over it? Something's got off the internet, though, probably. We hope you didn't give him that one.
No, no, that was probably from his run less, run fast app on his phone.
Well, that's the thing. Whenever you're doing a training program where you can run fast off running less,
it
does not make sense. But anyway, the story was, because I went and got all my like moles checked out for like skin cancers and stuff like that. Carly was on my case to get that done. And I can hardly take him serious when I'm in like the doctor's room with him, because I just know how much crap he talks when we're running together.
But he is the best doctor going around.
He's a fantastic doctor. And no bullshit. It's like, do this, open this. Like, I got a blood test today, actually. Yep. Like, he's just super thorough.
Yeah, no, he's good.
This is not an indoor.
But he's sorry to all the doctors out there, but he is such a doctor, isn't he?
I'm just rating all running. The doctors in a true care doctor's review. Yeah, that's good. So success doesn't mean like all the bells and whistles for you. It's just simple, happy. Having your mates around doing what you want when you want to want.
Yeah. And a couple of, and racing success to me is just going out there and feeling like I had a good race.
Mm.
Not necessarily a podium or anything like that, but just felt good doing
it. Did everything you could do.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm 30 next month.
Oh, yeah.
Got any tips for me? 30-year-old.
30.
Got to start doing something with my life.
That was...
If you could go back and tell yourself something at 30, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, what would I tell myself?
Because it's like young, but it's also old. Like 30. I remember going to my uncle's 30th when I was like 15, and he like had like three kids and like a business. And I was like, yeah, this guy's doing pretty well for himself at 30. And like, it just feels you get into a serious stage of your age. When you're 29, you're still in your 20s.
Yeah, probably my advice would be don't get too serious. Don't take life too serious. You don't have to stop being young just because you're 30.
Yeah.
Or I'm 46. I don't, it's,
yeah, but you're having fun for 46.
Yeah.
Maybe we put too much on, like, age.
Yeah, I think you do.
You just live your life. Don't even worry about how old you are.
Oh, yeah, age shouldn't come into it. If you're still doing exactly what you want to do, running-wise and that sort of stuff, it doesn't...
Yeah.
Yeah, and running is one of those things that you'll do till you're 70 if you keep doing it.
Yeah, I'm hoping so.
Yeah.
What would you tell yourself, though, if you go back?
Oh.
Steve Gray at 30.
Jeez,
what part of a piece of advice?
Probably drink less.
Drink less?
Drink less.
Going pretty hard when you're 30.
I don't know. I probably haven't got too many regrets.
Yeah, right.
No,
you shouldn't anyway, should you?
No, I mean, there's not much you can do about it. If you could, I don't know. I really don't know, because I'm sort of in such a good place at the moment that it's probably not a lot of change.
Mm.
Probably doesn't help you though, does it?
No, that's good. I think it's just good debriefing about that stuff and just.
Yeah.
If you don't want me to change anything, it's a good situation where people will be like, don't do this. Yeah, it's good. Just keep doing what I'm doing.
Don't be scared to pop a few kids out either, mate.
That's
probably my best advice, is don't wait till you're ready to have kids, because you never will.
Mm. See, that's what I'm waiting for, to be ready.
There's no time.
But I spoke to Benny about this on the podcast when he was on, and I was just like, life is really good. Like, I absolutely get up every morning most of the time.
Mm.
Where, and I'm just like, it's cool. Like, I can go overseas and race, and I can talk to people on this podcast, and we're starting to grow the running stuff and kind of getting good opportunities there. And
but you can still do all that. Your kids don't change. Your kids need to adapt to you. You don't adapt to your kids.
I think I've had some mates, and they've just got horror stories. They're like, you want to run now, get it done before you have kids, stuff like that. And I'm just like, get one of those prams or something.
There's plenty of pro triathletes out there that have got families, and they just...
Plenty of good runners have got them too,
yeah. And actually, it sometimes gives you something to run for.
Hmm. Well, I think it puts things into perspective. Yeah. Like, your whole life doesn't revolve around how well we're going to do this training session for the day. It's probably just more like you just got to get it done for the day.
It's a lot harder. Granted, it's a lot harder to train because, you know, the baby's crying at 3 o'clock in the morning and you've got to get up at 5:30 to go and train. Yeah. You know, that's what you're thinking about. But there's never a time. When is the perfect time for you to have kids?
Hmm. No, it isn't.
Yeah.
There's none in there, is there?
No.
That's an interesting one. So there we go. Have you got a mantra or a life quote or philosophy or something that you try to live your life by?
Oh, probably similar to what I just said, is just don't take yourself too seriously. Just have fun. There's times to be serious, but generally it's not much of your life that you need to take too serious.
Well, I think you're good with your ego. Like, you don't let it get to you at all. Like, that's why I wasn't sure if you'd want to come on, because you don't like, do newspaper articles on me or no. kind of build up any hype around yourself. And
which is pretty hard with Sansi around the ring the rim every couple of weeks.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, but do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's a good... Like, do you ever have to check that? Or is that just something that just comes naturally to you?
I don't reckon I've always been that way. Like, probably early on when I was doing all right, there used to be a few, you know, riv things and that sort of stuff in the paper. And they always take you out of context a little bit. Mm. And I've probably learned from that that you'd rather not do it because... Mm. of how you come across sometimes.
I write it myself now.
Do you?
After yeah. Berlin, I just said, email me the questions, I'll write the answers. And that's it was actually good because he put it together yeah. well. But I just, yeah, same thing. Just used to get hate, get misquoted or sounding yeah. like you're cocky when you're not. Like you just kind of, yeah. here's the answers. Yeah, now yeah. you just make what you want of the written yeah. quotes.
Don't make me look like a wanker.
Because sometimes yeah. you go in and, like, I don't know how, this isn't having to go at the rib, but I've dealt with some newspaper article journalists in Bendigo and stuff. And you might sit down and they've got a little notepad
yeah.
and they're just... chopping down words.
Yeah.
I'm just like...
And then they jumble it all together.
And then you see your quote and you're like, there's five yeah. words on that guy's piece of paper.
Yeah.
You just do it in Bendigo all the time at the athletes track. They just have a little notepad and it's...
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I didn't really put all that in the one sentence, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't mind it if it doesn't make me come across as a tool. But yeah, I'd probably steer clear of it. I mean, I'm a 46-year-old bloke running around having a bit of fun. Doing something that I love, but I don't really need.
Yeah, still, you still deserve that publicity, though. Like, even when you went to Worlds over in the States, like, was there an article about... I don't think I saw one about you, was it?
I think there was when I was away, there was one.
Okay, but, yeah. I might have been away.
Yeah, you're probably yeah. away, too. Yeah, but you know, it's not why you do it.
I know, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's news and people want to put you in there, but yeah, it's not definitely not why we do it, is it?
It's funny, that ego, but then that alpha male thing as well, because you see you guys... What those names you listed off before who are down there running together.
Yeah.
All pretty big alpha males.
Yeah.
But would hate to be on the back page of the local newspaper. Yeah. Well, other than probably Trav wouldn't mind it. He's usually paying to get his photo in there somewhere with an advertising.
Yeah.
Puts his photos on our for sale boards everywhere. It's an interesting dynamics, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny that running and the five alpha males, you know, just and it depends who's up at the time, doesn't it? Like someone might be a bit fitter than someone else and or training for a race and no one else is training, so there you give them that space to, except for Sam, we always try and take him down whenever. But
yeah, well, he always seems to be pretty up and about though as well. Yeah. He just freshens up for those Wednesday mornings every week. What's coming up next? You got a race?
Well, we've got the big one this weekend, mate. The Challenge
Shepparton.
Team Mumma Bowling Club.
Got to back that up. Back up the win.
Yeah.
I'm worried. I am.
Oh, yeah?
Someone commented on Santi's Strava post. Just asking if he's racing, and then he said yep, and then they said, is it the same team as last year? And he said yep.
Who was it? You don't know?
Sean Bruckner or something like that. I just saw a name, but yeah I didn't recognise, but I wouldn't know anyway.
Yeah, right.
Some cyclist is sussing out who's going around.
Yeah, because that bloke last year that rode in that mixed team.
Yeah, we don't talk about the mixed team.
He was super, yeah.
I'm happy to get rolled by a mixed team. It's when if we get rolled in the men's division.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if he rocks up in a men's team, we could be in quite a bit of trouble.
Yeah, we'll see, mate. Take it on. Whoever turns up on the day, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always a bit of fun.
So you'll do the swim, Sands, you'll do the ride.
Yep.
I'll front up for the run.
You'll be bringing us home, mate.
I haven't told the coach that yet. I probably should
get
a plug that in. Yeah. Sunday long run.
Yeah.
21K at 320 base. Right, but anything else after that? Anything you'd be doing?
I'm thinking of doing the sprint race on the same day because that starts at 10.
Yep.
So I might slide that in and then... Looking forward to doing some shorter stuff this year, being fit for it. I haven't been summer fit for a few years. It's always been Cairns and then Shep and then sort of let go.
Yeah.
So probably the old Gatorade race, which is the 2XU.
We do the series?
Yeah, which is travelling around a bit. And that's it, I think. Probably the January try.
Pretty good culture with those, that Gatorade series, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, they're good.
And that's not what you're talking about over in the States, like a bit too flashy and fake tan and
No, not really, it's more sort of grassroots.
That's good.
Yeah, it's not until you get to the Ironman sort of stuff where blokes are you know,
flogs,
roosters.
good.
Yeah.
And then another half Ironman somewhere?
Look, maybe go back to Cairns next year and have another crack up there.
I heard you got thrown down a challenge to run was it you? Do you get Noosa Marathon starting up next year?
Sub 3 hour.
Sub 3 hour challenge.
Yeah.
not going to happen.
Not going to chase it?
No. That's
check the ego at the door.
Oh, yeah, mate.
Sandy's thinking about it.
Is he?
This is Sam Kennedy. He's throwing out a challenge, yeah.
Yeah.
I was in the doctor's that day. That's he's like, go, quick, just have a look at this before we do this. Yeah, and he's opening up his computer and showing me the engine.
That's a tough gig.
Sub three is not. I coached a couple of guys who were. Oh, they've actually just gone 248 and 251, but they were.
Yeah.
Well, Kramers went from 259 to 251.
Yeah. So what do you reckon, say you've done a half marathon,
mm.
What time would you need to run that in to be comfortably say, yeah, I can have a crack at going sub three?
Oh, you'd want to be, you've got to be close to 120, don't you?
Oh, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It depends, the context is important. Like if you're talking to an ultra marathoner who's got the base there already and running 30K is not an issue, well, you know, you could be right, but it's breaking three is not easy.
We said to Sam.
Look at Sam and Steve. I mean, Sam and Sandy when they tried to do it 2 years ago in Melbourne. Like,
was that 3?
They were on for three though. Like, you just blow to pieces.
Yeah.
And if you haven't done the work, you just can't hide in that last 7K.
And that's what 13 minutes. That's 20 seconds a K quicker.
Is that what they were? 313, 312, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot to pull off.
Yeah. It's and Sam's run a half, I think, at 129 something.
Oh, so it's on half marathon base.
So, mate, you got to do that again.
Yeah. It's hard to do when you're training for triathlon too, I reckon.
Yeah.
Like, you need to do a lot of running.
Yeah, you ditch the swimming and the riding.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you did when is it? It's May or something, wasn't it? That or March?
Yeah, something like that.
You can maybe do triathlon stuff till December, Jan, then have that huge base and then try to... Because I think being on the bike's good for you. It's a good way to get fit without killing yourself. Because running can get you injured pretty quick.
Yeah. But, Sam being bigger. And if he throws away that run fast, run less app.
We'll get sued by those guys. We always get sued every week on this podcast. Someone says controversial bag and some company out.
Just beep it out.
If you want to sponsor us, guys, feel free. We'll do some ads at the start and end. Yeah. Do you reckon you'll do a marathon?
I'll do another one day. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I don't have... Well, I've not been a runner.
Mm.
I don't have fond memories of marathons, so...
Mm. A long way.
Yeah. And like I said, you've got to love it.
You think you do, yeah.
I actually did enjoy Gold Coast Half Marathon a few years ago. I trained as a runner.
Was I there that year? Did we go in the opposite direction? Might have been the year I wasn't there.
It was probably 6 or 7 years ago.
Oh, you didn't go out with Beck and Dusky?
And I trained, I did the Hal Higdon running.
Got his book in my bookshelf, yeah.
And it's a good program. That was basically running 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And I did that for probably 3 months, I reckon, and
got fit.
Yeah,
it's a good event up there too.
It is, yeah, and it's fast. So
yeah, out and back.
Yeah,
early start though, 6 a.m. kickoff.
Yeah.
Hey, did you end up reading that book about that chimp in your brain?
Chimp
paradox.
Yeah, I think I got about 2 chapters into it.
Wasn't happy. Flicked it.
No, I don't read anymore because I'm getting old. And I don't want to wear glasses, so my arms aren't long enough.
I don't want to wear glasses. Yeah. No one's going to see you at home.
But it's admitting that I'm getting old. So, yeah.
It's probably good. It's a good book, that you should.
Yeah, I remember you doing that talk at Jamie and Simone.
Yeah, well, that was when I was trying to think of, like, how long have I known you? Geez, that must have been an ordinary talk. Because
no, it was good. I really enjoyed it.
That would have been one of my first ever speeches, I reckon.
That was good.
I was just like, yeah.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it.
I hope I've come a long way since then. But I was thinking about that the other day, kind of cringing. I'm like, what were you even talking about that night?
I think chimp thing was great, I reckon.
Yeah, that was one good thing. Yeah. I remember just finishing reading that book and putting that in.
Yeah.
Just had a mate down in Hobart finish reading it, and we were just talking about it the other day.
Yeah.
Something in the mind. Like, the mind is...
Yeah, I haven't read that book, valuable. But I've still used that principle that you talked about, the chimp.
You know, all you got to do is watch a 10-minute YouTube video and you get what you need to know out of the book. Yeah.
Just know why your mind's telling you that.
And just acknowledge it. You're feeling that way for a reason. Because he worked with, we're talking about Steve Peters. He worked with the UK cyclists. Remember at, was it Beijing or London? They just come out and won so many gold medals and, yeah.
And I reckon I saw him at the Velodrome in Melbourne at the World Championships.
Mm.
He was in the cubicle next to me.
Yeah.
Like, taking a piss.
Yeah.
And I said to him, are you that bloke? He goes,
That's me.
So, yeah.
Beautiful, mate. People can't follow you online. You don't put it out there, do you? Sometimes at the end, there's images like, you know, what are your handles? See, Benny gets you and just lists off 5 handles. Yeah. But,
no sponsors.
You can only see him in person, this guy, guys.
That's it.
Thanks for your time, Steve.
No worries. Thanks for having
me,
mate.
We've got to go for a run together now.
Yeah, that's it.
Should be good. Thanks, mate.
Good on you, mate.
Cheers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.